Now it takes a major announcement today in a pair of cold cases in Collier County that have prompted rewards for information from the filmmaker Tyler Perry. Hi there, I'm Patrick Nolan. A wrongful death lawsuit has now been filed against a former Collier County Sheriff's deputy who was reportedly the last person to see two men alive after putting them in his patrol car. For New Corner's Carl Fortier has more from Naples on what this means to the families of these two men who are still seeking justice after 14 years, we're talking, Carl.
Well, two incidents a few months apart had former Collier County Deputy Stephen Culkins putting Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos in the back of his patrol car. Neither Williams nor Santos were ever seen again, and Culkins has not fully cooperated with investigators. Now Tyler Perry is strengthening his support for the men's families while an attorney files suit against the former cop.
It's not one day that does not go by that I just want to break down.
Marsha Williams says she will not rest until justice is served in the presumed death of her son, Terrence Williams. The father of four was last seen near a North Naples cemetery in January of 2004. According to reports from the Collier County Sheriff's Office, former Deputy Stephen Culkins told investigators he gave Williams a ride to a Circle K gas station. A few months earlier, 23-year-old Felipe Santos had vanished in a strangely similar circumstance. A sheriff's report says that Culkins told investigators he was going to arrest Santos for having an expired license, then changed his mind and let him out at a Circle K.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them alive was this sheriff's deputy.
The bodies of Santos and Williams were never found, and Culkins never faced any charges. The Collier County Sheriff's Office fired him for being uncooperative in the case. Then on Tuesday, attorney Ben Crump announced he's filing a wrongful death lawsuit against Culkins.
And he will be made to come to be deposed and give sworn testimony for the first time to answer all the questions that Marcia Williams has for him.
Filmmaker Tyler Perry has supported the quest for justice in this case for years, offering a $100,000 reward for any information leading to a conviction back in 2014.
We have not gotten any leads. I'm raising that reward to $200,000. My prayer is in all of this, in trying to help her, is to just get the answers and get the justice that she deserves, that Terrence's children deserve, that the Santos family deserves.
Sheriff Kevin Rambos released a statement today thanking Tyler Perry for continuing to raise awareness about the disappearances of both Santos and Williams. Anyone with information about either of these cases is urged to call Crime Stoppers. That's 1-800-780-TIPS. In Collier County, Carl Fortier, Fox 4, in your corner.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome back to Paradise After Dark.
Dark, 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 dark.
Tonight we are going to go into part two of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos, the two missing men from Collier County, Florida.
Well,
are you done?
Am I done what?
With your potato skins?
Not really, but you made me stop.
Are you ready to record?
I am. Are we recording now?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
My bad.
First, we have some business that we need to attend to. First things first, and I haven't mentioned this in the last few podcasts, but we are still looking for sponsors. Local sponsors would be great, considering that we're a local podcast talking about Southwest Florida. So if there's any businesses out there that want us to talk about them, we'd be happy to if you give us money.
We can show you numbers. We're actually having people listen.
Yeah, people are it's picking up, and we've got a good base of listeners now, so I think we're worthy of some sponsors by now. And on that note, we actually did set up a GoFundMe account, and let me tell you why.
Because we're going skiing in Colorado.
No.
We're not going to Colorado to go skiing?
No.
Oh.
I have no desire to go skiing or be in the snow ever.
Good point.
No, really, though, we did set up a GoFundMe because producing, recording, researching this podcast has become a little expensive. We're
broke. No, I'm kidding.
No, but We were just kind of wondering if maybe some of our friends and our fans wanted to throw us a couple dollars that goes towards new equipment.
Preferably fans, because all our friends are broke.
New equipment. We actually have to pay for documents when we get them from the courthouse or the sheriff's office. When we do our research, you know, piddly stuff like that. It's
certain recordings, things like that, it does cost.
Yeah, we're actually working on a case that we actually are trying to get a copy of a 911 call, but it's on, what is it, a reel-to-reel?
Reel-to-reel. It's like pulling teeth.
Yeah, so we're going to have to pay, I don't know how much money, to get it transferred.
We don't know yet.
We actually don't even know how much it's going to cost yet. So, yeah. Anyway, we have incurred a lot of expenses. So if anybody just wants to throw us a few dollars, that'd be great. It's all going to go back into the podcast. We're not going to go to Mexico or skiing in Colorado. We are, however, going to go to CrimeCon in June of next year.
There's other things you can do, too, if you want to help us out as opposed to giving us money. Go on there and give us a 4-star rating.
5-star, not 4-star.
Well, I mean, we're about 4-star right now. If we got money, then we could be 5-star because the sound quality would be much better.
True story.
True.
Yeah, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Share us with your friends. Share us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Tell your friends. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, if you can't give money, help us out that way. That'll work too.
Yeah. We're just trying to have fun and do a good job. So anyway, now that that's out of the way, moving on. Tonight we are sponsored by Mick Ultra, not Tito's.
Not Tito's. No Skunk Apes tonight either.
So let's go into it. Let's recap. If you have not listened to part one of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos, please press pause, go back, listen to part one. We are not going to be able to go through all the details of part one in part two.
But can we go through some of the details from part one?
Yes, we're going to do a quick recap.
Yeah, because that'll help me.
Okay, recap. Terrence Williams. Terrence Williams was 27 years old on January 12th, 2004, when he went missing from Naples, Florida. Terrence was last seen at the Naples Memorial Garden Cemetery, being pulled over by Sheriff's Deputy Stephen Calkins of the Collier County Sheriff's Office. Terrence Williams was pulled over by Deputy Stephen Calkins on January 12, 2004, and he was last seen being put in the back of Deputy Calkins' patrol car and being driven away, and he was never seen again. So Terrence's roommate became concerned after not seeing him for a couple days and contacted his mother, Marcia Williams. Marcia Williams tried to file a missing persons report with the Collier County Sheriff's Office, but they denied her because he was an adult and he hadn't been missing for very long, only a couple days. So she got her friends and family involved. 4 days after his disappearance, his aunt up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, was able to track down Williams' vehicle and found out it had been towed from the cemetery. The tow record shows that the tow was requested because Williams' Cadillac was obstructing traffic. So no one at the Collier County Sheriff's Office could find any information on Terrence Williams, and the family continued to call and ask questions. A supervisor reached out to Deputy Calkins directly to find out what was going on. Okay, so Calkins has no memory, apparently, of pulling over Terrence Williams and putting him in the back of a police car at this point. A few days later, his supervisors ask him to submit an incident report, and Calkins states that he first came in contact with Williams at 12:15 p.m. after noticing that the car he was driving was in distress. He pulled him over, but the encounter was so brief that he only knew his first name as Terrence. Calkins claimed that he followed Williams into the cemetery parking lot and that Williams asked him for a ride to a nearby Circle K convenience store gas station because he was late for work. Now, Calkins says that he dropped Terrence Williams off at the Circle K, came back to the car because Terrence had told him that his registration paperwork was all in the glove box.
Because we all know that's how deputies work.
Right.
I mean, this was not 1956.
He came back to the car, found out that there was no registration in the glove box. He moved the car. He was seen by the cemetery workers getting in the car, moving it out to the road, half on, half off the road, obstructing traffic.
And he got out through the keys in the grass.
Got out through the keys in the grass, left it there, called his buddy in dispatch to request a tow. Now we have a clip of that.
I got a homie Cadillac on the side of the road here. Signal 11, signal 52, nobody around. Maybe he's out there in a cemetery. It's back in his car, I'll be gone.
Calkins also requested a background check on Terrence Williams, giving an inaccurate date of birth, a specific date of birth that Williams had used before and given to police when he was arrested in Tennessee. This contradicted Calkins' earlier statement that he never knew Williams' last name or any other personal details. Marcia Williams filed a complaint against Steve Calkins with the Collier County Sheriff's Office. So we have a quick recap on all of Calkins' inconsistencies when it came to Terrence Williams. He told dispatch that he was investigating an abandoned car, even though his later statement indicated that Williams was driving when he stopped him and his car was in distress. Phone records showed that Calkins never used his cell phone to call the Circle K, as he claimed, which that's right.
His official
I didn't mention that a minute ago, that he tried to call when he supposedly couldn't find the registration in the car. He tried to call the Circle K, and his phone records showed that he did not make that call. No one at the Circle K remembers getting any call from Deputy Calkins on that day. Calkins later called another dispatcher, gave Williams' full name and date of birth, and asked for a background check. Calkins said he was alone, but investigators strongly doubt that story because he had the date of birth from Terrence that was significant. Because it wasn't his real date of birth, but a fake one that he had used in the past. So Terrence would know that date of birth, but nobody else would.
Exactly that. Well, maybe the arresting officers in Tennessee.
Well, I highly doubt that he somehow tracked down in that small amount of time those officers and got that information.
I agree 100%.
So that's our quick recap. Terrence Williams has not been seen since. A new lead in the case surfaced not long after Terrence's disappearance when a diplomat at the Mexican consulate in Miami called Marcia Williams, Terrence's mother, to tell her about another man, a Mexican national named Felipe Santos, who had vanished 3 months prior to Williams in what appeared to be similar circumstances. Felipe Santos was last seen in the back of a patrol car driven by none other than Deputy Steve Calkins. So here we are.
You say Calkins, I say Calkins.
I think it's Calkins.
I'm not sure how it is. I mean, properly pronounced, I think it's douche, but
tomato, tomato.
Yeah, exactly. Calkins or.
So let's talk about Felipe Santos.
Let's do.
So Felipe Santos was 24 years old when he disappeared, born January 1st of 1979. Some agencies give his date of birth as May 26, 1980.
Speaks Spanish and minimal English.
He was a Mexican national living illegally in the United States. 5 feet 7 inches tall and weighing about 150 pounds. Brown eyes, black hair. Last seen wearing a t-shirt, blue jeans, and boots.
And he was a resident living in Immokalee at the time.
And he was living in Immokalee at the time of his disappearance. And he had been living in the United States for 3 years at the time and sending money back to his family in Mexico.
Which is pretty common practice. That's pretty common practice for a lot of the immigrants that come here. They work and send money back. It's understandable.
Yeah, it's not legal, but that's just
the way it is.
The way it is. So, October 4th of 2003, Santos wasn't feeling well and he had talked with his wife about staying home from work. She encouraged him to stay home, stating that missing one day wasn't a big deal, but he ended up going to work anyway.
Just wasn't going to stay home.
No. Because he was an undocumented immigrant, Santos was unable to apply for a driver's license, and he took the risk every day of driving himself and his brothers to and from Naples from Immokalee for work. So every day he was driving from Immokalee into Naples for work. He was working in construction at the time. So on this morning, they were involved in a minor car accident around 6:30 a.m. in North Naples while on the way to work.
And his two brothers were with him at the time, correct?
Yes. His brothers were with him. His white 1988 Ford hit another vehicle near the Greentree Shopping Center at Airport Pulling Road and Immokalee Road. No one was hurt in the accident, and the damage to the cars was minor.
At this time, there would have been a Winn-Dixie there, I think. Now it's some Naples Community Hospital therapy thing.
It was a Sweet Bay.
There was I think it was a Winn-Dixie, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a Winn-Dixie. Sweet Bay's didn't come until later.
Well, Winn-Dixie's a reoccurring thing in our podcast. Remember Lenny Martis in the Winn-Dixie parking lot?
Mm-hmm.
That's a throwback.
And this accident happened in the Winn-Dixie parking lot. Maybe it's Winn-Dixie. It has nothing to do with anything but Winn-Dixie. If they want to sponsor us for talking about it, that'd be great. I'm just kidding. You can cut that out.
Okay, the other driver of the crash, Camille Churchill, said the brothers approached her and offered her money to pay for the damages and begged her not to call the police.
Yeah, they didn't want her to call the police because obviously being illegal immigrants, they're driving, they were scared. So they were trying to pay her and buy her off, say, hey, don't call the police, we'll give you money, just don't call the police.
Well, she called the police anyway.
Yeah.
And Deputy Stephen Calkins was dispatched to the crash. He cited Santos for reckless driving and driving without a license or insurance and placed him in the back of his patrol car.
You actually gave him tickets, correct?
Yes, he did issue him, I believe it was 3 citations and a notice to appear in court. Camille Churchill would later tell police that Calkins was agitated at the scene and made a comment about being tired of quote-unquote illegals driving without a license or insurance. Later on that day, Santos's boss contacted the county jail to post bail, and it was discovered that Santos was never booked into the jail.
Which means that he was never actually taken down and nothing.
He was taken away in the patrol car, but never taken to the jail. When questioned, Calkins claimed that he changed his mind about the arrest because Santos was, quote, polite and cooperative.
Oh, here we go again.
And left him at a local Circle K convenience store about a mile away from the site of the accident. Calkins stated he last saw him walking towards the payphones as he drove away. Circle K is a reoccurrent issue now.
Is it Winn-Dixie or Circle K? Which one's the bad vibe here?
I say just go to Publix. Pub subs. They were on sale for $5.99 last week. Not anymore, though. I got one. Like 2 days ago, and it was like $8.
Oh, I remember, because you got me. No, you didn't give me one. Never mind.
I was at work.
Could have stopped
on my lunch break.
Could have stopped on the way home.
Anyway.
Sorry.
I got to hit pause because I need another beer. And we're back. Santos was never heard from again after that. 2 weeks later, after Calkins submitted an incident report, Santos' family filed a missing persons report as well as a complaint against Calkins. Now, we have obtained this report, which my lovely co-host, Ken, will read for you now.
On October 29, 2003, at approximately 1,426 hours, I responded to the North Naples substation at 776 Vanderbilt Beach Road in reference to a missing person. Upon arrival, I made contact with a reporter, George Santos Martinez. Reyes Martinez, date of birth 1-6-54, accompanied Santos Martinez to assist as a translator. Santos Martinez stated that his brother, Felipe Santos, is missing. Santos Martinez stated that Felipe has not been seen since October 14th of 2003 at approximately 7:15 hours. Santos Martinez stated that he and Felipe were involved in a traffic crash at Airport Road and Immokalee Road at approximately 6:45. Santos Martinez stated that Felipe was driving the vehicle. Santos Martinez stated that the Deputy Calkins, badge number 235, responded to work the crash. Santos Martinez stated that the last time he saw Felipe was when he got into the rear of the Deputy Calkins patrol car. Santos Martinez stated that he and his family have looked everywhere for Felipe and cannot locate him. Santos Martinez stated that he does not think that Santos would intentionally leave his family. I was informed that Deputy Calkins took Felipe to Circle K gas station at 10996 Winterview Drive. Deputy Calkins knew that the clerk at the Circle K could translate for him to obtain Felipe's information for the crash report and citations. Felipe does not speak English. This was also a good place for Felipe to use a telephone and wait for a ride because his vehicle was towed. Deputy Calkins obtained information needed, issued Felipe citations, and left him there to call for a ride. A missing person and dental record release was completed and signed by Santos Martinez. I completed a teletype request and faxed it to communications to have Santos entered into the NCIC and FCIC. I also obtained a copy of a photograph of Santos taken at approximately 8:15, 2003. This report was written up by Corporal Chauncey, ID number 1759.
Okay, so after a two-month investigation by Internal Affairs, Calkins was cleared of any wrongdoing in the Felipe Santos case. 72 hours after Felipe's family was sent a letter stating that Deputy Calkins had been cleared of any wrongdoing, Terrence Williams went missing. How about that? Santos's wife, Apollonia Cruz Cortez, questioned the quality of the investigation into her husband's disappearance, citing the fact that she had never even been interviewed by investigators.
Well, why wouldn't they interview her?
I don't know. They never interviewed her. After the missing persons report was filed and the complaint against Deputy Calkins. In November 2003, a warrant was issued for Felipe Santos' arrest after he failed to appear in court for a hearing regarding the citations he was issued due to the accident that he was involved in the day he vanished. No evidence of foul play has been uncovered in Santos's case, and investigators believe he may have simply been laying low to avoid being arrested, but circumstances surrounding his disappearance are unclear. Checks of the United States consulate offices and Mexican passport offices have turned up no indication of his whereabouts. Santos left behind a wife and an infant daughter. His daughter is now 14 years old.
Because, you know, when you get arrested and you're scared of, you know, being arrested, deported, even though you're living here illegally, you go ahead and just leave your family behind because you're more concerned about yourself. I don't believe that for a minute.
I don't believe that either. And I think that if he were alive, he would be found by now. Same with Terrence Williams.
One would think so.
One would think so, but the former sheriff at the time, Don Hunter, noted that both men, Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams, would have some reason to disappear. Santos was in the country illegally, and Williams was due back in court in Tennessee, where he was facing jail time for failure to pay child support. Now, both families vehemently deny that either man would willingly disappear on their own, especially for those reasons.
Well, wasn't it stated that Terrence, he was working the two jobs because he was paying his child support?
He
was trying to pay?
Yes.
So it wasn't like he was trying to skate out on it. And I get it. Sometimes, you know, you fall in hard times and you don't have enough money to pay child support. So he might have been a little behind, but here's a guy that was working two jobs trying to make it up.
Yeah, that's why he got the second job at Pizza Hut. He was working in construction during the day and then working at Pizza Hut in the evening.
The only mistake that he made was driving his Cadillac without a license. That's the only thing this man did.
Yeah. So because the main person of interest in the case was a police officer, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the FBI were called in to investigate Calkins. Internal Affairs re-interviewed the deputy on March 30th of 2004 and discovered several inconsistencies in his story. Soon after the complaint was filed by Marcia Williams, investigators called in Calkins to take a polygraph, which he reportedly passed. Again, on April 16th, 2004, Calkins was called in to take another polygraph. This time he failed. He failed when asked if Terrence Williams was with him when he called dispatch to request a background check on him, and he failed the question as to whether he had any further contact with Williams after he dropped him off at the Circle K.
You know, on our sound clip, I listened to it once or twice or maybe 100 times. I don't know, somewhere between 1 and 100. If you listen to the background, when he's running the report, you can hear a man kind of talk a little bit. But it's hard to tell. It's hard to make out if it's like the dispatch, if it's a sound that's behind the dispatcher, or if it's a sound that's behind the deputy. So I don't know. Maybe he was there and he was saying, you know, because the dispatcher was asking questions. And in portions of it, it sounds like you could actually hear Terrence Williams in the background.
We need to get that clip.
So, but I mean, that's just, that was my own.
Let's get that clip up. Okay, now I hear a female in the background, but not a male.
Well, I can kind of hear. That's what I said. It was kind of, I didn't know if it was dispatch noise or what. But anyway, you can play it a few times and listen.
Yeah, I put it on here twice to listen. So Calkins did not take the news of his failed polygraph test very well. He began to claim that he was being set up, being framed, and targeted by the police agency. Co-workers did not take the news well either and continued to insist that he had been set up. That was when Calkins stopped cooperating with the investigation. Now, Sheriff Don Hunter said Calkins' patrol car was tested for blood and signs of a struggle, but nothing was found, which contradicts what Kevin O'Neill, Detective Kevin O'Neill, had said in the show Disappeared from Investigation Discovery. Now, he said that there was trace evidence found, but that information was kept from the public.
Which is common practice in a lot of cases
where yes.
The police will give as much information as they want to, but they have to hold a few things back. I mean, you have to have something for validity, because we've seen in a lot of cases and scenarios where the case gets to a point where it's such a high profile case that people just want to be involved, even if it means being questioned, arrested. They just want to give out, you know, so they have to hold something back to verify
right.
You know something.
Yes. On August 20th of 2004, Sheriff Don Hunter fired Stephen Calkins, saying that the deputy became uncooperative and that one of the three polygraph tests he took indicated some deception. And an internal investigation found that he had lied about the Williams case and violated agency policy. Now, I don't know when he took the third polygraph. He took one in March, and then he took one on April 16th of 2004. But he must have taken another one in between there, because in several different documents, I see that he took three. But I don't know.
Well, it says on the third one that he finally got up and walked out of the room. He said, I've had enough. I'm done here. And he just walked out of the room.
And I believe that was the last one on April 16th, which where he was found to be lying.
Be the one he failed, which I think is why, deception-wise. Because I think as a deputy, I mean, if your boss, the sheriff, if you will, says, hey, you need to take this polygraph so we can get this wrapped up and help us understand what's going on. Because if you take a polygraph, even though they don't hold up in court, it makes it look good to the public eye. And you fail. Well, if you're failing, whatever, you just get up. I think that's where the deception comes in. He was kind of lying, and they found that if he was willing to get up and walk out of a polygraph, well.
So Stephen Calkins, a 17-year veteran of the police department, had a clean record prior to this incident. He appealed the ruling, but it was upheld, and his dismissal stood.
Yeah, he claimed it was for political reasons.
Well, this was an election year. For Sheriff Don Hunter, just putting that out there again.
And if these two men that he came into contact with and was last seen with hadn't disappeared, they'd just put that out there.
Well, just looking at it from all angles.
I understand.
In a September 2004 letter to the sheriff, Calkins said that his use of black dialect was not meant to be offensive. But he admitted it was in poor taste. This is talking about the homie Cadillac. He also asked the agency to reconsider his firing, saying that he was on medication for stress, anxiety, and depression, and that a psychologist said he was, quote, burnt out, overwhelmed, under considerable stress at home and work. In a 2006 interview with the Naples Daily News, he called his involvement in the two cases coincidence extreme and told other media that he didn't know anything about either disappearance.
Coincidence extreme. Google that.
Well, that would really be an extreme coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Truly.
I'm curious how many other deputies have been involved, and I don't mean deputies across the nation, I'm talking just in Collier County, have put people in their patrol cars and been given a ride to work, of course, because their cars are broke down. So they don't check any information, they give you a ride to work. I want to know how many deputies in this town have come into contact with someone that they're helping out and they're going missing.
I've never heard of any other scenario like this.
Yeah. Well, this thing, and this is national. I mean, this went national news. This was huge.
It still is huge, and we're going to get to that in a second.
Oh.
Now, the former sheriff said before he retired in 2009, this is Don Hunter, he tried to get the story into the media around the anniversary of the men's disappearance in the hopes of generating new clues. "We've done what we could with it," said Hunter, now the police chief on Marco Island near Naples. "What I think it's going to finally come down to is whoever had more recent contact than Calkins with Mr. Santos and Mr. Williams." I want to talk about this for a second. So former sheriff of Collier County, Don Hunter, who is now currently the chief of police on Marco Island.
I don't think he is anymore.
He's not?
I don't believe so.
I think he is. You Google that.
I'll Google it. I think he retired from there finally.
Well, he believes that someone else must have come in contact with Felipe Santos and or Terrence Williams after Calkins dropped them off at the Circle K. He says, "What I think it's going to finally come down to is whoever had more recent contact than Calkins with Mr. Santos and Mr. Williams." So this is the one who fired Steve Calkins from the sheriff's office, but in 2009 is stating that he thinks somebody else must have done something to both men after Calkins dropped them off.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's just that seems.
Well, that might be his own attempt to cover his ass because of the fact that the sheriff's office could never get any probable cause to arrest Calkins, or even they never even had enough probable cause to get a search warrant for his house. They searched his police car and everything, but they could never even get enough evidence to get a warrant to search his house.
Yeah, and that's got to be frustrating as a sheriff. It's got to be frustrating that here's someone that is in your department, that's in, you know, your office, you're one of your deputies, and you can't quite solve a problem that he obviously knows is a problem.
Yeah.
He knows, I mean, this guy's a problem. And 17-year veteran, the scary part is how many illegal immigrants that he came in contact with that maybe didn't have any family here.
True. There could be other...
Santos, he had family here.
There could be other victims that we just don't know about because they were never reported missing.
Pure speculation, folks. We're not saying that he did, in fact. We're saying it's speculative.
So in 2012, actor-director Tyler Perry learned of these two cases. And I don't know this for a fact, but I think it was when he saw the episode of Disappeared.
It was.
That's what I heard somewhere. I can't remember where, but... Tyler Perry, was watching TV one evening and came across a national story about the missing men. He described getting a knot in his stomach, stating that he couldn't believe that this was going on. So, in an interview with Deadline Crime with Tamron Hall, also an Investigation Discovery show, he said that he does not believe that the circumstances surrounding the disappearance could be a coincidence. If it was, Calkins was the most unlucky man in the world. He became involved in the case by reaching out to Marcia Williams, Terrence Williams' mother, and speaking out about the case in 2013 in a press conference. He offered up a $100,000 reward of his own money for information about the case. That was in 2013. Now, everything's been quiet pretty much since then. They really didn't generate any leads. Nothing really came of it until about 3 weeks ago, maybe. September 4th, 2018, nearly 15 years after the disappearance of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams, renowned civil rights attorney Ben Crump, an attorney representing Williams' estate and his family, announced that there would be a lawsuit in a news conference at the Naples Daily News community room. He was flanked by actor and filmmaker Tyler Perry and Williams' mother, Marcia Williams.
He also announced that he was going to double the reward for the missing men's case to $200,000.
Yeah, Tyler Perry was there and he announced doubling the reward. Ben Crump said he hopes evidence presented in the civil lawsuit filed on August 30th in the Collier County Circuit Court can lead to a criminal case against the former deputy. Crump said that he would also represent the Santos family if they wanted to participate in the lawsuit. The lawsuit alleges Williams is dead and that Calkins is responsible for his death. Now, I have the lawsuit pulled up in front of me. I also have already posted it on our Paradise After Dark Facebook group. So you can go on there and it's a PDF file. You can read it yourself, but I'm just going to read the highlights of the complaint. This is a wrongful death action for an intentional tort resulting in Terrence D. Williams' death committed on or about January 12, 2004 by defendant who subsequently fled from Florida's jurisdiction. Now, Steve Calkins is now living in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, right? Is that where he's at?
Yeah, Iowa. That's where the paperwork was sent.
General allegations. On or about January 12, 2004, defendant Stephen H. Calkins was employed by the sheriff's office in Collier County. While on patrol, January 12, 2004, defendant initiated a traffic stop of a white 1983 Cadillac driven by Terrence D. Williams using a light bar on his marked patrol vehicle. Williams was a young 27-year-old African-American male. Williams was not suspected of committing any traffic infraction. Williams was not suspected of violating any Florida law. Defendant did not call, radio, or otherwise communicate to dispatch or the sheriff's department that he was stopping the Cadillac. Williams parked the Cadillac in a parking spot at Naples Memorial Gardens Mausoleum, a cemetery located at 525 111th Avenue North, Naples, Florida. Defendant engaged Williams and attempted to obtain Williams' driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Williams did not have these documents in his possession. Defendant then patted Williams down and placed Williams in the back of his patrol vehicle. Defendant drove away from the cemetery with Williams in the rear of his patrol vehicle. Later that day, defendant returned to the cemetery with the keys to Williams' Cadillac and drove the vehicle out of the parking lot. Defendant moved Williams' vehicle to another location outside of the cemetery property, partially obstructing the right-of-way of a road. Defendant placed Williams' keys on the ground near the Cadillac. The reason defendant placed Williams' keys on the ground was to stage the scene to make it appear Williams' vehicle had been abandoned.
Allegedly.
This is all allegedly. This is the civil wrongful death complaint filed by Marcia Williams and for the estate of Terrence Williams. And in the state of Florida, once somebody is missing for 5 years, they can be legally declared dead.
So 5 or 7? I thought it was 7. I'm going to go with you.
It's 5. So defendant then contacted Collier County Sheriff's Office dispatch to report that he had located an abandoned, quote, homie Cadillac, which was Williams' vehicle that defendant just drove. During this audio-recorded communication, defendant made numerous racial stereotype remarks about what type of person could own the Cadillac he staged as abandoned. Defendant arranged for the Cadillac to be towed. Defendant declined to have records of the tow sent to his mobile data terminal, his in-car computer, because he never called in or otherwise reported the traffic stop and never officially reported the abandoned vehicle on January 12, 2004. Instead, defendant opted for hard copies of the tow records to be mailed to him personally. After having Williams' vehicle towed as abandoned, defendant performed a warrant search for Terrence D. Williams, which included providing Williams' date of birth. Williams can be heard in the background of the aforementioned warrant search recording. So maybe you're right. Maybe that is Terrence Williams in the background of that recording.
I listened to
that's
a bunch
what they're
of
alleging in this. In
you,
this,
you can kind of hear. It's real faint. Now there is a female's voice that you noticed that is very prevalent, but that you kind of see it here in the distance because he said, "What's the last name?" And you can almost hear him like, and then you hear a little, and he says Williams, and that's when. So that sounds like he's got direct contact. I mean, which is not something he denied. He never denied. I mean, he did originally on the phone calls, but I'm saying once he wrote the report, he never denied that he had any contact with Williams because he admitted that he did. You know, he just, it's a little far-fetched. The whole thing is just far-fetched.
So the complaint goes on to allege that defendant, whom still had Williams in custody after towing his vehicle by misrepresenting that it was abandoned, never booked Williams into the Collier County Jail. Williams did not return to home, work, or any other place he frequented after being taken into custody by defendant. In the following days, Williams' family became concerned about his well-being and contacted the sheriff's office to file a missing persons report. Though persistent and insistent repeated contacts with the sheriff's office, they ultimately learned Williams' Cadillac had been towed by defendant, but there was no incident report associated therewith. Based upon numerous calls to the sheriff's office by Williams' family, on January 16, 2004, dispatch contacted defendant. Defendant, in an audio-recorded conversation, denied being at the cemetery, interacting with Williams, and having the car towed just 4 days earlier. Terrence D. Williams was never seen alive again after he entered defendant Stephen H. Cocking's marked patrol vehicle. Under materially similar facts as those supra, defendant Cockins took another minority, a Mexican immigrant, Felipe Santos, into custody and placed him in the rear of his marked patrol vehicle on October 14, 2003, 90 days earlier. Deputy Cockins never booked Santos to the Collier County Jail, and Santos was never seen alive again after entering defendant's patrol vehicle. Defendant was subsequently terminated from employment at the Collier County Sheriff's Office for the disappearance of both Terrence D. Williams and Felipe Santos. The facts circumstantially established defendant Stephen H. Cockins intentionally murdered or otherwise caused the death of Terrence D. Williams. So they're alleging count one, wrongful death as a result of murder or manslaughter. Plaintiff adopts and realleges the preceding paragraphs as fully set forth herein and further alleges that Terrence D. Williams is dead. Williams' death was caused by defendant's wrongful act, constituting a violation of Florida Statute 782.041A or any Category 1 or 2 lesser-included offenses. The alleged defendant breached the duty of care when he abducted Williams without lawful authority to do so, with the intention to facilitate the commission of murder. On information and belief, as a direct and proximate result of defendant's intentional actions, Williams was murdered. As a result of defendant's intentional actions to murder Terrence D. Williams, his estate and statutory survivors suffered damages.
Okay, so this summons was served to Steve Calkins at his home in Cedar Rapids, Iowa?
Yes.
And that was delivered on what was? Was it September 6th? I guess it was.
Yes, he was served on September 6th.
And in an email statement last Tuesday, current Collier County Sheriff Kevin Rambaugh said he supports all lawful methods to bring closure to the investigation.
He says, "We thank our community, which has been working this case together with us for years, and for providing numerous tips and leads to investigators. We also thank actor and filmmaker Tyler Perry for continuing to raise public awareness about these local cases and keeping them in the national spotlight. Marcia Williams hopes that the wrongful death lawsuit against Calkins will provide some of those answers and evidence that prosecutors can use in a trial. The attorneys representing the Williams family in the wrongful death suit will have to prove Williams died because of the negligence or intentional harmful act by Calkins. If the case makes it to trial, it may be difficult for prosecutors to prove Calkins killed Williams without a body being found. Just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they're doing something. You know, O.J. Simpson was acquitted of the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. But
he
then
was. That was such a hush-hush case.
Then he was sued in civil court for wrongful death, and the Goldman family won the lawsuit. So in civil court, he was basically convicted of murder, but not in criminal court. The only difference here is that...
You know what the difference was? The glove didn't fit, so they had to acquit.
The difference in this case is that Stephen Calkins was never tried for these murders. So, if they can bring on a civil suit, a wrongful death suit, and gather enough evidence in the civil suit, then they can criminally prosecute.
Well, I think
that's what they're aiming to do with this.
Well, they're trying to get him because, see, he never had to testify. He never had to come in front of his peers and testify or answer questions. And I think that's what they're trying to do, is they're trying to get him to answer some questions.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're going to depose him and force him to answer questions under oath. And in the complaint, they demand a jury trial. And Steve Calkins actually has responded. This was just filed with the clerk's office on the 26th, which was 2 days ago. Today is Friday the 28th that we're recording this. A response from Stephen Calkins was filed. It is a very pathetic pro se answer to the complaint. He denies every single allegation.
Never underestimate the power of denial.
And he says summons was received on September 6, 2018 in Iowa. Court documents are from Collier County, Florida. Defendant no longer lives in this, quote, jurisdiction, unquote. And then goes on to list 1 through 47, deny, 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 all the way 1 through 47. Stephen H. Calkins, defendant, requests a jury trial. That's all it says. I mean, come on, dude. You were a police officer. You can do better than this, but whatever. It's like he doesn't care. It really, looking at this, it's his answer. It's really just like he just doesn't even give a shit.
Well, you know, I mean,
and it's very pompous. The wording, it just strikes me as very arrogant and pompous.
Mm-hmm.
What?
No, I was just saying. I mean, I can understand where you're coming from with that. That would be your thoughts, because you're looking at it more of the, hey, you've committed this crime. Remember, don't convict him. Don't convict him yet.
Convicting him.
Just so everyone's aware, the stuff that he said occurred is possible. You know, we're not underestimating the
stuff
possibility.
Who said?
Stephen Calkins, that he dropped him off as okay. We're not the judge and jury.
But there's no evidence whatsoever or surveillance video or eyewitnesses or anything to back up his story that he dropped him off at the Circle K. However, eyewitnesses from the cemetery that say that he put Terrence Williams in the back of the patrol car, left with him, came back alone, moved the car out into the road, called dispatch, had it towed, didn't want the tow records sent to his mobile computer. He wanted hard copies mailed to his house. He lied, saying that he had no memory of any contact with Terrence Williams. And going on to Felipe Santos, there's witnesses that state that he put Felipe Santos in the back of his patrol vehicle, absolutely no witnesses or surveillance video or anything showing that he took Felipe Santos to the Circle K. There's nothing to back up his claims. There's only evidence that proves he's lying about almost everything.
But did the glove fit? Then you must have quit.
I'm just stating the facts, and that's why we got all the police reports. Felipe Santos's reports are, what, 87 pages?
84 pages long.
84 pages long. I mean, we have gone through this with a fine-tooth comb, and all I see is, granted, it's circumstantial, but all it does is a point to the fact that Stephen Hawkins is a liar. And I don't think anyone would have any reason to lie unless they're hiding shit because they've done something wrong. That's my opinion. What's your opinion?
My opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Honestly, I think that he definitely had something to do with it. I think at that time in 2004, was it 2003? It was October 2004. I mean, we're talking about the area where Santos got picked up and the area, for the people that are not familiar with the air, with Naples or how that was laid out in 2003 and 2004, we're talking about a distance of maybe 5 miles, and I'm saying drive time, maybe less than 10 minutes apart where the accident. So Santos was picked up on Airport Immokalee. Well, you can get to Wiggins Pass within 10 minutes. Of regular drive time. You go up Mako, make a right, go down to Wiggins Pass, you make a left. Actually, no, you go straight, and then you're at Memorial Gardens.
Yes.
So we're talking about less time than that. So
5 minutes.
We're not, exactly. We're not talking about one was one end of town, one was the other end of town. We're talking about, I mean, within a stone's throw, lack of a better term, these two guys come up missing. For same reasons, no license, and maybe he was frustrated, and like he had stated that he's burned out, or, you know, something like that. That happens. I mean, I've been at my job for a lot of years, and there are certain years where just certain times I just like, oh, God, I can't do this no more. I'm sick of it.
Not me. I love my job.
Well, you just started. Me, I've been there 26 years. So, but, you know, it's just, oh, I just dated myself, didn't I? Anyway, is it possible they picked him up? Yeah. And I mean, he definitely had the contact. He definitely had him in the car. I mean, these are not things that he denies. So if you take the facts of the case that he's not denying, that we know, that we are aware of, everything points to the wrongdoing by him. Here's what I want to say. In all the cases I've researched, watched, listened to on television, the last person to see him, 90% of the time, is the person that usually gets prosecuted and arrested and interrogated and usually goes to jail. The last person to see them alive or spend time with them alive. And now here we have a deputy who spent time with him, the time with the two gentlemen, and they went missing. And so, yeah, my opinion is that I think that, yeah, he had something to do with it.
Well, there are some theories.
Well, let's get into them.
Okay.
Let's hit the theories.
All right. The first one about Terrence Williams is that he moved to Naples from Chattanooga, Tennessee because drug dealers were after him, and perhaps they found him in Naples and did something to him. His mother claims that that's a blatant lie. The second theory is that Terrence Williams ran away to avoid paying child support. Everyone in his family and everyone that knows him claims that's just bullshit.
Well, it is bullshit because think about this. He's got family. He's got how many kids, we say? Four?
Four kids.
He's got four children. And if he loved his kids, and you don't want to run away from them. Just because you have to pay child support doesn't force you to go away from them to where you don't want to be around them.
Mm-mm.
And disappear. I mean, okay, so you don't want to see your kids. You don't want to pay child support. You don't want to see your ex. You want to see your mom. Everybody wants to see their mom.
True. My mom drives me crazy, but I still love her.
I love your mom.
She's a little nutty. So is my dad with his comments on our Facebook page.
Shh. Give away his identity.
He's not going to listen to this podcast anyway.
Our listeners will, and he'll check out our social media, which you should do anyway.
But he doesn't know how to even work his phone, let alone listen to a podcast. But he does know how to comment on our podcast Facebook page, so.
Oh, he's on that. Oh, he's got Facebook figured out.
I know, he does. He's a troll. Total troll on Facebook. Oh my God. Anyway, moving on. Another theory is that Terrence Williams had a bad relationship with his stepfather, Marcia's new husband, Terrence Bug, and perhaps the stepfather did something to him. Marcia Williams claims that that is impossible, and investigators say that the stepfather was 100% cooperative in the investigation and never a suspect.
Well, is that really something we got to bring up? Well, I guess you do.
That's a theory that people have thrown out there. Have you been on Reddit?
I have. Folks, stay off Reddit.
I avoid Reddit because
it's I love Reddit for some things, but man.
If I get on Reddit, though, I go down the proverbial rabbit hole, and next thing I know, it's been 4 hours, and I'm trying to solve Kaylee Anthony's murder, and...
Oh, you're going to solve that one? That one's pretty easy.
I just...
That's where the justice system went wrong. Maybe we'll cover that case
someday. I think that Reddit is a really awesome...
Speaking of trolls, you brought up Casey Anthony. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I think that Reddit... and I heard this on True Crime Garage. Shout out to True Crime Garage podcast. They are my absolute favorite.
Team Captain!
Team Nick right here. I even have a Team Nick t-shirt. But they mentioned... I don't remember what it was, but this is hearsay. Obviously, I heard it on another podcast, but with the Golden State Killer, like a year before they caught the Golden State Killer, somebody on Reddit had put that guy's name out there saying that they believed he was the guy. And yeah. A year later, it was that guy. So I think that quote-unquote citizen detectives or web sleuths or whatever you want to call them, armchair detectives, whatever you want to call them, I think that they can actually be beneficial to in some aspects. In other aspects, it's just a freaking web of crazy bullshit.
90% of it is crazy.
But if you have the time to sift through it, I think that it can be an interesting thing to do if you have 4 hours to kill.
One of the other theories is the Starlight Ride, where if you go back, and if anyone's ever seen the movie Rambo, you'll understand this, where they took John Rambo and they put him in the car and they drove him to the edge of the county and said, get out, start walking that way and come back. But the Starlight Ride or Starlight Tour, if he put these men in their car, in his car, and drove them out to the edge of the county or into an area that was a heavily wooded area, the Everglades. The only issue I have is I've heard this story told and this theory utilized where they talk about taking the gentleman to the Everglades and dropping them off. The only issue I have with that is the Everglades is nowhere near these particular sites. Now, they're close together, like we spoke about before, like within 5 miles.
But they're... But very far north.
Exactly. To get to the Everglades, you have to be gone for quite some time. And remember, we're talking round trip because if you remember in the Terrence Williams in part one, there was 15 minutes to 1 hour time.
The cemetery workers gave the timeline that he was gone 15 minutes to an hour.
So if he drove 30 minutes down Immokalee Road, he's still not going to get to... I mean, you could... Theoretically, but getting back is a little tougher, especially again, 2003. The road wasn't as built as it is right now. But the concept is with the Starlight Tour, where you take the people out, you drop them off at the county line or in a particular area and say, hey, get out, take off walking, keep going this way. It was sort of a non-judiciary punishment for your crime. So, hey, instead of taking you to court where you're going to spend time in jail, we're going to take you here and you're going to have to make it back to civilization. The only issue I have with this is this concept, and this theory has been put out there numerous times. It's been on Reddit. A lot of other people have told the stories and they've talked about the Starlight Tour, the Starlight Ride, which I have talked to gentlemen who were deputies, and they said that this was a concept that they had used before going way back in early days, a long time ago. So where would you take these guys now and drop them off to where they couldn't make it back? No. Williams, being a young, you know, young man, he's in construction, so I'm assuming he's a pretty strong man, tough, if you will. The odds of him not making it back are pretty slim. And if you take him to the county line and say, get out, he's going to go to Fort Myers, first payphone he gets to.
And call his mom.
Say, hey, mom, look, this is what happened. You know, hey, help. Or his roommate, because he's already given the example of, hey, I'll call my roommate if there's a problem. If I'm scared of the police, I'll call my roommate.
Yeah, we talked about that in part one.
So now, there was one deputy that was interviewed in the police report. I only found one interview with one other deputy in the police report that spoke about, hey, and I guess it says here, I don't even mention names, says if this particular deputy knew of any remote areas that Calkins would frequent while at work, and he identified a couple locations. The first was Powerline Road at the north side of Amaka Road near Powerlines, and the second was at the east end of some of the roads that run off of Old 41, north of Landmark Estates. Now, this is really close to Landmark Estates. It's really close to Wiggins Pass Road. It's really close. It's right there off Old 41. Anyone that's familiar with the area. And it says here that the detective asking the questions, him and Detective Stevenson had drove down the Powerline Road and didn't find any location remote enough for Calkins to take someone and not be seen. We also did not see any evidence of a crime while on the road. When we then went to the roads off of Old 41 and found that there was a lot of dirt trails that they needed to be searched, he decided at that time to come back with some canines training cadaver searches and have some of the search done in the entire area, which they did. And they did check those out in certain areas with the cadaver dogs, and nothing was found.
Now, this particular deputy that you're talking about that was interviewed was good friends with Stephen Calkins.
He was a friend and had worked with. I wouldn't say good friend.
But they hung out outside of work.
I can't answer that. That I don't know.
All right. So another theory is that Calkins targeted Santos and Williams because they were both minorities. And possibly Santos ran back to Mexico after being cited for the accident on the day he disappeared. Yeah. I'm just putting out there what's been put out there.
Bullshit.
Now, here's something that intrigues me a bit. Now, this is a theory that Stephen Calkins was somehow involved in a human trafficking ring and sold Williams and Santos into human trafficking.
So you think that maybe he got picked up and he took them to like some, what do they call them, trap houses or a house somewhere where maybe they were staging these men?
Maybe, because, and I know it's not common, and I did do some research on human trafficking of grown men, and it's not...
It does happen.
It's not common, but it does happen. And still to this day, grown men and women and children are abducted and sold into basic slavery, whether it's sexual slavery or work slavery, whatever it may be. There are humans that are basically trafficked and sold to this day.
Human trafficking can be misleading because most people think that human trafficking, oh my God, it's a female. She's being sold out to a sex ring and it's a sex thing.
Or a child.
Child, because we don't even want to get into the details. But most people don't think of a grown man, but in fact, it can happen.
It does happen.
It can happen. I mean, it's regardless. Now, I do know that they did... because they did make the playing cards. They made the playing cards for the missing men, missing people across the county, convicts. Anyone that the police or the FBI were looking for or investigating or that were missing were part of a deck of cards that they made back in the early 2000s. And these particular cards were handed out everywhere. And there was one case that's actually listed in the police report of a man saying, hey, I remember seeing that guy. He was sold to a gentleman in North Florida to work on a chicken farm. And
that
deputies,
guy being Felipe Santos, because Felipe Santos was featured on those playing cards.
He was a three. I don't know which was an ace or spade. I mean, I don't know if it was a spade or a diamond or a club or a heart. But
I'll find the
nonetheless,
image.
Nonetheless, it was a three. And he said, hey, I recognize this guy. Because they had it's actually really smart what law enforcement did. And they actually, it helped in a lot of situations because they did put the cap on a lot of cases because they actually put all these playing cards into different prisons. So when the prisoners were sitting down playing cards, because who better to find a criminal than a criminal?
Yep.
And who better to recognize someone missing than, you know, people that are criminals, because we know that, hey, we all get together with friends and we're going to say, hey, look, see this guy here? Yeah, well, I killed this guy, or I did this, or I took this guy. And you hear about these jailhouse confessions. So they did make the playing cards and they put them out there, and Santos was recognized. So one gentleman says, hey, a chicken farm. Although the deputy did follow up, he did contact the farm, he spoke to the owner.
He is the King of Hearts, by the way.
Was it the King of Hearts? I thought it was a three.
Nope, the King of Hearts. I've got it pulled up. I'm saving it. I'm going to post it to our social media.
Yeah, so you can check that out. But the playing cards, I mean, it was a pretty smart concept. I thought it was a three, but I apologize. But either way, it doesn't matter what he was. But someone did recognize him. They did follow up on the leads, but nothing ever came of it. And he was never found. And the gentleman said he sort of recognized him. They checked the farm and didn't find anyone. So
that's the final theory on Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. And that is the conclusion of our part two.
Can we just go back to one more theory that I'm going to put out there?
Oh, go. Please, just by all means.
One more theory.
Go ahead.
Calkins killed these men and then buried them somewhere. And there are buildings on top of them, or they're just missing. Remember, this is Florida. There's a lot of wildlife. So, wait.
I just don't know where you're going with this.
I'm saying that, you know, I mean, the obvious. What if Calkins took these men out in the field, shot them, let them lay there, and their bodies were disassembled by the wildlife, the animals, the critters, the bugs?
Well, the obvious theory is that Calkins killed and did something with both of these men.
My question is, but I guess what I was getting at is the only question is, if he did that, so he's got to...
Where are the bodies?
Exactly. And he's got to go, take them somewhere, do something with them, and make it back to the scenes or back to his station or his patrol. Because remember, he was at work when this occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to get away, do something to these men, and then get back. So, but there's a lot of theories, and that has to be one of them because that's where we're at now. They're trying to find answers, and that's where Tyler Perry and the attorney are trying to put something together to find out.
And we will see where that goes. As of right now, the last thing filed in the court case was Stephen Calkins' answer to the complaint and demand for jury trial. I think that maybe in the future we could do a part three.
Possible.
Because I'm going to be following this case, whether we're going to do it or not. I'm just interested. I've been interested in this since it happened.
Well, with Tyler Perry's involvement, it's going to make national media. It already has.
Oh, yeah. Not,
I mean, it's huge. But with his involvement, it's going to stay national. I'm not going to say it's going to be O.J. material because, you know, it's not O.J. Simpson. But
all right. So that is the conclusion of part two. We will do an update later on. Definitely, I think. I think definitely we'll do an update because...
Oh, we'll have to. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening. And again, please check out our social media. We are on Facebook, Paradise After Dark Podcast, Instagram, Paradise After Dark Podcast, Twitter, Paradise Dark 239. And please check out our GoFundMe page, which is GoFundMe.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast. Throw us a couple bucks. That'd be awesome. And I think that's it.
That's all I
really want to say. Stay tuned.
Yeah, we're going to update this case as it goes along. I'm sure there'll be more in October. Remember, we got some spooky stuff happening in October.
Yes, we got some spooky episodes coming up. We're going to talk about the ZombieCon murders and some local ghost stories.
Don't give it away.
Why?
Surprise.
Okay. Anyway, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for joining us here
on Paradise After Dark.
Good night.
Okay, so Where we left off was in 2018 when Marcia Williams was suing ex-deputy Stephen Calkins for wrongful death in the death of her son, Terrence Williams. Well, that case came to a close in 2021 after their attorney, Benjamin Crump, missed the deadline to file for trial and the case was dismissed. The lawyers blamed their failure to file for trial on a miscommunication and an extended office shutdown due to the pandemic. But Circuit Judge Lauren Brody found the team, quote, failed to establish excusable neglect and issued a final judgment that Marcia Williams and her son's children, the Terrence Williams children, shall take nothing from Calkins, and that was also the arbitrator's decision. So Marcia Williams appealed to the Florida Appellate Court, and the appeal was denied. So what will they do next? Attorney Ben Crump said his team is pursuing other avenues for justice, including sharing information with the U.S. Department of Justice in hopes the agency will open a federal investigation. There's also the case of Felipe Santos, which has never been brought to court for either criminal or civil charges.
I find that to be a very sad situation, that it's like there's nobody there for him.
Well, I believe that Benjamin Crump and Tyler Perry and everyone involved has offered the Santos family help with that, and I'm not sure exactly why they haven't taken them up on the offer. So the first two episodes are focused on So Tyler Perry, like I just said, has been a key person in this case, is producing a documentary series called Never Seen Again, which will be streaming on Paramount Plus. The first two episodes are focused on the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. Quote, I was shocked and outraged, Perry said in a press release about the series. They're both disappearing with the same deputy after being put in the same deputy's car. If this is a coincidence, then he is the most unlucky man in the world, that this could actually be something happening to him twice. I just want to see how that is possible, and I think that anybody in law enforcement can look at this and go, what happened to them?
Personally, I'm not so sure it's either luck or unluck.
I don't know. Honestly, and I've racked my brain about this over the years. We've talked to different organizations. I actually wrote an article for Investigations for the Missing.
Yeah.
About this case. And I still to this day just, I can't figure out what the heck could have happened to these two men.
All I can say is if you were, and I'll ask this question to our listeners, if you were a detective and you were in the interrogation room with Officer Calkins and you were discussing this matter, would you, I mean, what kind of questions would you ask? What would you say? You know, I mean, what would you say? Because I can just picture the interrogation going something like, you know, I can understand once being a coincidence, but twice seems to be a little odd, because you know an interrogation detective is going to be like ripping this guy apart because it happened twice.
Right.
So just out of curiosity, what kind of questions would you ask? I don't know. So please give us an answer. Hit us on social media. Let us know. I guess that's going to be it for tonight, Lauren.
Again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/palmahawkmedia. That's PALMAHAWK Media.
And also, again, on our website, you'll find links to our social media, this Patreon, if you can't find it anywhere else, and a merch store, and there's some other cool things on there to look at.
And please make sure to subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening on and rate and review. This really helps us branch out and reach a wider audience.
And as always, everyone, thank you very much for listening
to Paradise After Dark.
Duck, 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 duck.